Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. We're glad to have you listening. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft, is at the controls. Over the past 40 years or so, probably more than 40 years, the countries of Africa's Great Lakes region, and these are Rwanda, Burundi, Congo, Uganda, Kenya, and Tanzania, have been torn by political violence. In an effort to help promote peace and healing in this region, and also to help their fellow Quakers, the Friends Peace Teams in the United States created something called the African Great Lakes Initiative. And for a number of years now, I think close to 10 years, this program has been working on the grassroots level to try and promote reconciliation and to heal trauma resulting from many years of conflict. This morning, in this part of the program, we'll be talking about the African Great Lakes Initiative with three guests. David Zaremka is the coordinator of the initiative. He's here with us in the studio. Also, Cecile Nirmana. She's from Rwanda. She is a Tutsi survivor of the genocide there in 1994. And also, Hezron Masitsa, his lead facilitator with the Alternatives to Violence program in Nairobi in Kenya. He is also assistant clerk of the Quaker Peace Network in Africa. All three of them are here visiting in Champaign-Urbana. We'll be giving a talk tonight, and we will tell you all about that because I'm sure that there are people here in and around our community that would like to attend. And also, questions are welcome here on the program. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign-Urbana. So if you're here locally where we are, use that number. We do also have a toll-free line, and that means if it would be a long-distance call, use that number, and we will pay for the call, 800-222-9455. Thank you for being here. Thank you all.
Thank you for having us.
We should probably begin, I guess, by talking a little bit about the context. Can you talk just a little bit about this part of Africa? What general thing should people know, do you think?
Well, the conflicts in the area began a long time ago, during the colonial period, actually. I first went to Tanzania to teach Rwandan refugees in 1964, which shows you how old I am. And that was the conflicts that occurred at the time of and before independence, which came in the early 60s in all of these countries. And essentially what happened was that certain groups became in control of the government and control of all resources, and other people were left out. And there have been a lot of political battles. And as time has gone on, guns have become quite common in the region. And so it's become more and more violent, or has become more and more violent. There was a genocide in Rwanda in 1994, but there was a series of conflicts before that, starting in 1959. Burundi had a major coup in 1993. And, of course, in northern Uganda, it's been since 1986. There's been an ongoing civil war with the Lord's Resistance Army. And Kenya has been relatively stable, but it's a country that Genocide Watch has on their list because it is based on ethnic and tribal politics, and that always can lead to violence. Tanzania has been quite peaceful throughout this period. And, of course, the Congo has never been well-governed. And still in the eastern part of Congo, there's still a lot of conflict going on.
Mm. Let me turn to Hezron Masitsa. You're from Kenya.
Yes.
I was surprised to learn, maybe I shouldn't be surprised to learn, that I think of any country in the world, Kenya has the most Quakers. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's very correct. The numbers have been growing. I think basically because of when the Quakers came to Kenya in the year 1902, they invested a lot in projects, in industrial activities, and they put up so many schools and hospitals. And I think these were major points of attraction that people found that the religion was offering some other ways of participating in people's development activities. And so many people got attracted to the Quaker Church in Kenya.
And in Africa also, there are many Quakers. And perhaps I shouldn't be surprised because I know that having talked about this recently, there are many Christians in Africa. And the numbers of Christians in Africa have grown very, very steadily since, say 1950. But I suppose I was a little bit surprised to learn that, in fact, so many of these African Christians are, in fact, Quakers.
Well, they The missionaries went there, like you said, in 1902, and they went to a part of Kenya called Western Kenya in one particular tribe called the Luhya tribe. And there, I mean, there, you just walk down the street, there's a Quaker church, there's another Quaker primary school, Quaker secondary school, another church, and it just goes on and on. So they are quite influential in that part of the country.
Mm. Well, let me bring Cecile into the conversation. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about what your experiences have been, particularly during that terrible time in 94.
My name is Cecile Nyiramana. I'm from Rwanda. And now in Rwanda, we are working on peace process. Peace and reconciliation process after the horrible 1994 genocide, which took place in 1994 for 100 days. And during that period, we lost around 1 million people. And it was very, very horrible. We get many different consequences, many orphans, many prisoners, and many widows, and many people who fled the country. And during that period, I was studying in university with my husband, and it was very hard for me to be in that time. I was pregnant, and it was very hard for me to leave, but my husband tried his best to protect me and to ask somebody to hide me. This is why, after this horrible period, I decided to do something for peace. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, tell me about the program that you are involved in.
From 2001, after attending different workshops organized by Friends Peace House, one Quaker organization in Rwanda, which is working on peace building. When I started to heal and decide to forgive, I decided also to do something for peace. And because my husband was in jail, I decided to help women whose husband are in prison because of genocide, and to bring them together with widows, survivors. It was very hard, and some of the people told me that this will be impossible, but I tried my best, and I helped those women, and now they are working together for peace. And they are called Women in Dialogue.
Mm-hmm. So to make sure people understand just how difficult a thing this would have been, what you did was you had women who lost their husbands in the genocide with women whose husbands were in prison for having committed murder during the
genocide. These women were used to be enemies because on one side, they were women whose husbands are genocide suspect, and others were widows, survivors from genocide, and it was really quite difficult to ask them to come together and sit together and try to talk about reconciliation, forgiveness, and peace. But with the Friends Peace House, because they started to organize different workshops about healing, about forgiveness, they helped me to organize a workshop where we invite those women. And when we invited them, they didn't know who they are. We invited them and we asked them to come together, and we give them some skills about forgiveness, about healing. And after 3 days, even on the beginning, it was very hard for them to sit together. After 3 days, they start to talk together. And when they, we we brought them back together for another workshop, a 3 days workshop. They finally decide to stay together and work together for peace. This is how we did.
I want to turn back here to David. David's Remka. The Friends peace teams had been doing this kind of thing, that is, going to a place where there had been conflict and trying to help people to do this very thing in other places around the world, certainly in Europe. I think the story I read was that you had been doing it, or you were talking about the fact that it had been going on in Europe, in the Balkans. And someone said, well, why just there? I mean, there are other places where we could be doing this. And that was, in a sense, the beginning of this project that involved Africa.
Well, actually, it was me that said that. But
it was you that said that. All right. Somebody said that.
What I said is, more explicitly, there's many conflicts in the world, and there's much interest in Balkans, in the Middle East, and lots of other places, and very little interest in Africa. And so my question was, why weren't we involved in Africa? And there are so many Quakers in the region that, are part of the conflicts there. And so the response was actually quite positive once I brought that up. And having been in the region for a long time, I became the coordinator of the African Great Lakes Initiative.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll turn back again here to Hezron Masitsa, and just to have you talk a little bit about this whole process of reconciliation and trying to get people together who have been involved in these conflicts. That it seems unimaginable just how difficult, for example, a situation like this in Rwanda would be. I think, first of all, I think people can't quite imagine a million people dying. It's your mind just can't quite handle that. And then the idea of the people who were touched by this, the victims, the perpetrators, actually being able to sit down together and to talk and to have some kind of reconciliation, that's very, very difficult. How is that even possible?
Yeah, I'll talk about Kenya. First of all, I say the case in Rwanda and Burundi present to us some kind of major lessons to learn from, because Kenya as a whole is about 42 tribes. And we had instances in 1992 when we started experiencing what we call the tribal clashes, and these are some are politically instigated. And we had people being really divided because of one tribe maybe being in authority, now deciding that we want to maintain the position, to maintain leadership. And so because of this, being in position, they have the resources. They're able to empower their people, give them the weapons and all that. And so they now start attacking other people, another tribe. So because of this, we some of us involved in peace-building processes, we felt that we need to do something about that. We need to build communities. We need to, go back to where we were as one state, maybe before the, as David said, part of the dividing lines was when they colonialists came in 1885 and divided the country into, sub-tribes and setting these tribes against each other. So it's not been very easy, because when people start feeling that they are more powerful than the others, and when people feel that we have better resources, we are better equipped than the other people, and then you have the dominant, the powerful, versus those who are the minority, and they feel they are powerless. What we've done through our peace-building processes is to help people understand, again, this is through the Alternatives to Violence Project, is bring these people together. And Alternatives to Violence Project goes through major themes like, building communication, affirmation, building trust, and, of course, the entire, community-building processes. And this helps people to understand, take stock of what I am, what are my strengths, what are my weaknesses, and what can I learn from the other person, what can I gain from, working together as a group. It takes time to build trust because of history. People go back to historically and people say we were, for example, in Kenya, people occupy certain lands, And then people moved in after independence because we felt we are free, we can go and live anywhere. But people say, no, originally this was our land. And you people are brought in by the British, when the British came over to colonize us, they brought you here because of their own selfish interests. So because of this history again, then you find it's not easy to build trust over time. But through the program, as I've said, it's helping us, you know, to break some of these barriers, to break some of these, you know, people being so much inclined to their own, going back to their own histories and all that, so that we can look into the future where we can all sit together and think as one nation and, you know, act collectively.
Let me just introduce again our guests. We're talking with David Zaremka, Cecile Nirmana, and Hezron Masitsa. David Zaremka is coordinator of the African Great Lakes Initiative of the Friends Peace Teams. This was an effort by the Friends, that is the Quakers, to apply some of the kind of the peace and reconciliation work that they have done various places around the world to Africa and to a region in Africa that for decades now has experienced a lot of conflict and political violence. And this is the Great Lakes region in Africa that includes, among other countries, Rwanda and Burundi. Also here in the studio is Hezron Masitsa. He's lead facilitator with the Alternatives to Violence Program in Nairobi, Kenya, and assistant clerk of the Quaker Peace Network in Africa. And Cecile is a Tutsi survivor of the Rwandan genocide who decided that she wanted to also to do work for peace and reconciliation, and was involved in a kind of a bringing together, as she explained, of women who were widows who had lost their husbands in the genocide, together with the wives of men who were suspects and who were in jail. They are here in Champaign-Urbana visiting, and will give a talk tonight. Right now, I'll ask David to, can you give the basic information on the talk that you're going to give?
Well, I know it's at the about 7 o'clock at the Friends Meeting House in Urbana-Champaign, but I don't actually know the address and exactly where it is, but I'm sure you can look it up on the internet.
Okay, yeah. Well, yes, definitely. We'll get the information here before we finish up. Questions are welcome, too. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I'm interested, maybe David, you can talk a little bit more about what it is that you do to try to help people like Cecile and Hezron in doing this. I mean, what kind of suggestions or experience can you bring to this process to help? I think what you're trying to do is, in a sense, help give them some tools so that they can then do it. It's not something that somebody else can do for them. They've got it to do it. But I think your idea is in helping to show them how you go about it.
Well, when the genocide was unfolding, and the one in Burundi, which I was well up on, mm-hmm. I was wondering how are these countries ever going to put themselves back together? And the Quakers had developed a program for U.S. prisons called Alternatives to Violence Project, which is AVP, which Hezron was referring to. And I thought that this program would be useful in the region. And so we introduced that program there. Some people were quite negative, saying this is an American program, you're being missionaries again. But I had enough confidence in the Africans that decide if they like this program or not, and B, if they did like it, that they would change it to meet the circumstances that worked there. And so, as Cecile said, in 2001, we introduced it into Rwanda, and we've done hundreds of these workshops since then. And moreover, the Africans in Rwanda and Burundi have developed a second program, which we call HEROC, Healing and Rebuilding Our Communities, where they work on reestablishing that community that it was destroyed during either the genocide or the conflicts in Burundi. So I think, frankly, I don't do much of anything. it's rather just the organization of bringing people together, getting some resources for them to do their work. And I think one of our major activities is publicizing what they do. I do bring people like Cecile and Hezron to the United States, three or four of them a year, and they go and make a tour for a month or so. I like to call them missionaries to the United States because we need to hear these kind of things that are happening there. Yeah.
We do have a caller here. I do also want to mention here the Friends Meeting House is at 1904 East Main Street. in Urbana. And our guests this morning, David Zaremka, Cecile Nirmana, and Hezron Mesitsa, will be talking tonight at 7 o'clock. And I'm sure that anyone who is interested in hearing what they have to say should feel welcome.
Oh, yes, definitely.
All right. We have had a caller. Maybe they were calling in to tell us where the meeting house was. In any case, questions are certainly welcome. Questions, comments, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. I would like to have Cecile, I'm interested in having you talk a little bit more about what happened when you got these two groups of women together and how it is that they managed to find some kind of common ground so that they could start talking to one another. It would just seem to me to be very difficult because of what the widows lost, and the fact you would naturally think they would be very angry and wouldn't want to have anything to do with the other women. How did it even happen that they started they were even willing to even talk to each other, to sit down next to one another?
As you said, it was very difficult for these women to accept to sit together, mm-hmm. even to talk together. But with the workshop we organized about healing and forgiveness, for the first time, for the first workshop, it was quite difficult and impossible. But when those women arrived and in the whole room for the first day, they didn't want to talk together, even to sit together. They were divided, one part in one side and others in another side. For the second day, they came back in the whole room for the workshop. They started to greet one another. And because of different games we use in our workshop, they were supposed to come together or to greet one another or to talk together because of the workshop. And when we arrived on the end of the workshop, they started a little bit to talk together, and after a short time, we invited them again for a 3 days workshop about how they can try to talk about reconciliation. For the first workshop, it was just healing and forgiveness. For the other workshop, they came back and we were surprised to see that when they come back, even in our culture, for the person you meet for the second time, you are supposed to greet that person, even you have some problems with this person. Mm-hmm. So they start to greet one another. And after the 3 days of this workshop, they decided to stay together. To stay together because they recognized that even they met different problems, they were innocent. Even the women whose husband were in jail, even those widows, innocent survivors, they discovered that they are all responsible of families. And they said, this is our common thing, and we are supposed to try to seek how to help one another, how to work together for seeking peace and prevent another kind of violence, because we are now suffering, our children are now suffering, and we are supposed to do something for peace together and to try to seek how we can help one another. So this is how these women, they decided to stay together. But for the widow survivors, they asked to the prisoners' wives, the only thing we want you to do is to let us know the truth. Who killed our husband or our relatives. We want you to ask your husband if they were involved in genocide. They ask forgiveness. They let us know the truth, and we are ready to forgive, but if we know the truth. And this is how they decided to continue to work together and to help also Gacaca process to know the truth and to work for reconciliation. Mm. And now they're still working together.
That's a wonderful story. Let's bring, and I think we have somebody here who wants to join in the conversation. Let's bring them in. Someone who is in Champagne, line number one. Hello.
Hi, that was me before, but somehow my phone quit. I don't know. I guess I'll have to turn my radio down. Cecile has been here before, and I'm a member of the meeting here, and I wanted to welcome her back. And I'm also part of the committee that brought her here. And we have a dozen copies of the book that Cecile helped write. And it's called Seeking Peace in Africa, and she has three articles in it. And we hope that she'll consent to sign any that people buy tonight. And I guess somebody already called in and told you where the meeting house was, right?
Well, when I was sitting here, I pulled your website up on my computer, so that's how it is I got the information. And I'm assuming that is indeed incorrect. It is correct. It's 1904 East Main.
Right. And it's across the street from the Champaign County Nursing Home, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So when you pass the nursing home on your right, look left, and then in a few yards or 100 yards, I don't know, the meeting house will come up, and it's set back from the street, and there's a sign out front. So I hope a lot of people that are listening will come out and hear these talks tonight. And also, there will be another book there. David, your daughter is with you, right, as well?
Well, she's here in the studio, but she's not being interviewed at the moment.
Right. I know she's not on the program, but she'll be there tonight. And she has written a book called The Pigment of Your Imagination, which I understand will also be available tonight, right?
That's correct, and she'll be there to sign copies.
About growing up as a child of an interracial marriage, because your wife is Kenyan, I believe, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, we've met at Quarterly. I'll reveal myself tonight.
Okay.
And I'm just really glad, David, that you're having this program, and this is a wonderful program that's going on in Africa, and the forgiveness that the people have been able to achieve with the Alternatives to Violence and the African Great Lakes Initiative is truly inspiring. And we've had another person here, Milesi Kanaro, who's from Kenya, that's also been involved with AGLI, and she also has an article in the book. So I'm sure this talk is going to be really worthwhile, and I hope lots of listeners out there come and also see our fairly new meeting house, which is a beautiful facility. So thanks for having the program.
Great. All right. Very good. Well, that should give me the opportunity to introduce again our guest for anybody who might have just tuned in here the last 5 or 10 minutes. David Zaremka is coordinator of the African Great Lakes Initiative of the Friends Peace Teams. And it's been an effort that's been going on now in the Great Lakes region of Africa. And here, this is the area where you find Rwanda, Burundi, the Congo, Uganda, Kenya, and Tanzania, places where there has been a lot of conflict over the last 40, 50 years, and more perhaps in some places. And this was an effort of the Friends, the Quakers, to take some of their peacemaking work that they've done other places and around the world and to take it here into Africa, where there are a lot of Quakers living. Cecile Nirmana is from Rwanda. She's a Tutsi, was a survivor of the Rwandan genocide of 1994 and has been involved in reconciliation, peace and reconciliation efforts there, as she has explained. And Hezron Masitsa is lead facilitator with the Alternatives to Violence program in Nairobi, in Kenya. He is also assistant clerk of the Quaker Peace Network in Africa. I'm sure that if you're interested in learning more about the African Great Lakes Initiative, they have a website. And if you just put that into your web browser, you'll find it, and you can find out more about that. And if you'd like to hear more from the guests, meet them. They will be giving a talk at the Friends Meeting House in Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. It's at 1904 East Main, and welcome, it's open to anyone who would like to attend.
Piggyback on what Cecile has said about why people do forgiveness and reconciliation. The problem is that, you know, the people who are really traumatized by the thing, and after you go, you know, 10 years or 12 years now, 13 years, with that burden on you, and you withdraw. You withdraw in all kinds of ways. And so when our workshops happen, the participants for the first time are opening up again. Maybe it's the first time they've actually told their stories to other people, even including their own family members. They don't tell their stories. The society is very stoic. You don't sort of tell people things. And then you also start – we make sure the workshops are usually balanced half and half. And so you hear the stories from the other side, and all of a sudden you realize that they're humans, that same kinds of things happen to them as happened to you. And what people say is that when they decide to do forgiveness, a big burden has – a heaviness has been lifted off of them. Mm-hmm. And when we frequently do follow-up workshops a month later and see how things are going, and what happens frequently is they stop beating their children or their wife. They start talking to their neighbors, many on the other side of the things, and they do they become much better kind of people like you normally would be, but because of their experiences, they have withdrawn from that. Hmm. So that's the reason why people want to reconcile. After you just can't. You do want to spend your whole life with those burdens, and people will say, "Now I'm human again."
Hmm. I would think that one of the things that's very difficult to overcome is the natural. It's not something one would be happy about, but sort of the natural desire for vengeance, for getting even, particularly if you have lost something, if you have lost a family member. I would think that one of the first impulses and the things that you have to get over is the desire for evening the score.
Well, that's sort of like the first stage of recovery from trauma. And if you never get past that stage, you're never going to recover. And I actually think that American society puts way too much emphasis on that. And we sort of assume that nobody's ever going to get over that desire for revenge. And I'm sure, you know, at the people talk about it, that before coming to our workshops, they wanted revenge, or if the opportunity came, they would do it, which, of course, then they realize as they talk in the things, that would, of course, make another cycle of this kind of violence if people continue with that. And with women, Cecile said it, but I think I want to emphasize it, is with the women, they look at their children and they don't want it to happen to them. They want their kids to grow up friends and not enemies with the other kids. Mm. And that's, I think, one of the first impetuses for reconciliation.
Yeah. It does seem that in fortunately enough, in conflicts like this, finally it comes to the point where people say, it's got to stop. And the only way it will stop is if we all stand up and say, all right, that's it. That's enough.
Yeah, there's a that what I wanted to add on is, you know, people have a choice in a conflict situation. Either you become part of that and you perpetuate the system, mm-hmm. or you come in and break the cycle. So I think the initiatives that we're involved in as Africa Girls Initiative is saying that maybe people are not doing so much. So and we asked ourselves, what can we do to break the silence? And so all these initiatives are meant to bring people together and to start asking those questions so that we can look at any alternative ways of us, you know, coexisting. We know we are different, I mean, in terms of tribe, there are other differences that can cause us not to live together. So if we dwell on these differences, then we'll continue building societies that are divided. But it's just, you know, to help us understand that we are different from each other. But of course, look at the needs that, you know, make us, you know, to be common, to be one. And so this is our goal. Something I just want to respond about telling the story. In you know, something I just learned recently when I was here about restorative justice. Mm-hmm. I think one of the important reasons for people sharing stories is it helps them to validate their meaning and their feelings. So as they go through the stories and all that, and they share with the people, one other way is that it's people call it restoring, that, you know, your past was shattered by what happened. When conflicts come and you lose maybe your spouse, you lose a member of the family, it's your life is completely shattered. And so one of the ways to try to come out of that is sort of restore. So you are writing a new story about yourself. And then this is based on, you know, a future. You want to move from the past that was hurting, a past that is destructive, and you want to look onto a new future that gives you hope. So that's the part of the reason why, you know, people have to share their story.
Yeah. You know, it strikes me that one of the problems here maybe in these conflicts is that while people are divided along various kinds of lines, they may be divided because of their identification with family, with their group, with their region, the place that they live, with their tribe, whatever. Mm. But that sometimes those differences between people can be pretty small. And that what people end up fighting over is whatever there is of value. People fight over control of resources.
Exactly.
People, whatever the good stuff is, people, that's what people often are fighting over because they don't want to share, because they want to get as much as they can of whatever is valuable. And they're also fighting for who gets to be in control, you know, who gets to make the decisions. It seems to me that if at some point you've got to get to issues of social justice and equality of opportunity and so forth, and that seems to me that might even be much harder than forgiveness for past violence, because that means that you have to say, now from this day forward, how are we going to live? How are we going to organize ourselves? How are we going to make sure that everyone has as good a life as possible? It strikes me that might even be harder.
Let me make a comment on that. I want to remind the listeners that the Rwandan genocide was planned from the top down by a small clique called the Hutu Power clique. And when the president died in an airplane crash, they had already planned the genocide, had list of people that they needed to kill, which was everybody in the middle, including Hutu. And they implemented it. So it was a top-down – I mean, your government at that point was saying, you know, kill
– go kill your neighbors.
That's right. Yeah. They called them Inyenzi, which means cockroaches, because they don't use the terms itself. But I want to remind readers that we did the same thing in the United States over centuries with the Native Americans, and that, you know, it was government-led, and, you know, Daniel Boone's still a hero, and yet, you know, his history was essentially pushing and killing Native Americans and things of that sort. So this is not exactly as far away as some of us like to think.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with the assertion that at the bottom line, people are fighting over resources. And I give an example, like in Kenya, as I said, you know, we have these major tribes, the dominant tribe being a Kikuyu, and the Kikuyu tribe was the one that where the founding president came from. Mm-hmm. So being in power, you find that most of his, a lot of development activities took place in his area called the Central Kenya. So we have major roads, you have major industries, and then you have most people coming from this region are the ones maybe holding key positions. When power changes in 1978 and goes to President Moi from the Kalenjin tribe, now you see a lot of the shift again in the resources. I mean, the area starts developing universities and a lot of other institutions. So now when Kibaki comes to power in 2003, so again, you find there's a shift again. So now the two tribes are the ones who have been involved in tribal clashes from 1992. So the fight is who controls the resources, because in Kenya there's this term that it is our time to eat, because somebody from our community, from our own, is now in leadership. Mm-hmm. So it's basically a war about resources. Mm-hmm.
And in Rwanda, this, again, I think people have to understand this conflict in terms of the colonial experience of the country, where the colonial power came in and there were the two groups of people, they're the Tutsi and the Hutu, and they picked one of them, and it happened to be the minority group, and they essentially put them in charge. They used them to run the country. And then when the colonial power was gone, the people who were the majority and had been kind of at the bottom, I'm sure understandably said that this situation was wrong all along. Now, what happened was also wrong, but the genocide was when they decided, well, the thing to do, we're going to take power now, or we're going to kill the Hutu and anybody who was not with us. And it seems like we still come back to this issue of, now that it's over, how do you make a society where there are equal rights, equal opportunity, where everybody gets the opportunity?
The current government is doing it best to help people to understand just they are Rwandan only. Mm-hmm. Because before the genocide, with our IED, we could some could not have or get a chance to be in a secondary school or get well education because of the ethnic group. They could not get a good job because of the ethnic group, and now the government decided to give new ID card without ethnicity, so you can't make a difference. You can't. Everybody can get a chance to get a job, to get well education, and to get on different opportunities. To get a different opportunities, and we don't care of his ethnic group. This is how the government try to help people to understand that they have the same right. Even the Hutu, even the Tutsi, they have the same right in the country.
Yeah. And that has been working out so far? Has that been successful, that effort to make ethnicity, your ethnic identification, less important so that it doesn't matter if you're Tutsi, if you're Hutu? Has that been working?
I think right now there is no problem about ethnicity.
Yeah.
If we compare before the genocide, what has happened, there is no problem, no real problem.
Yeah.
I think the readers, the listeners ought to understand that Hutu and Tutsi all speak the same language. They live on the same neighborhoods, on the same hills. Rwanda is a very hilly country. And there was, in the past, a considerable amount of intermarriage between the groups. So they're not really different ethnic groups or tribes, as, say, happens in Kenya, where people speak a different language. They look very different in some cases and things of that sort.
Well, that's I did it clumsily, but I guess I think one of the point I was trying to make was this idea that the division between the two was very artificial, and that it was something that was part of the colonial experience of the country, and that in many ways, I think you say the genocide is part of the legacy of colonialism.
Well, The Belgians divided people up and gave them an ethnic card, the identity cards with their ethnicity on it in the 1930s. And they had this the race theory that was common in the 20s and 30s, even in the United States. And it said that they thought that the Tutsi had come from Ethiopia. Now, what was interesting about that is that they considered the Ethiopians to be the most southern branch of the white race. And therefore, if the Tutsi came from Ethiopia, they were part of the white race, and therefore they should be the rulers. And that they taught this kind of stuff in school. And, of course, then when the genocide came, the hate radio station would say, send the Tutsi back to Ethiopia. Throw them in the river and send them back to Ethiopia. And they pulled 20,000 bodies out of the river as it entered – Tanzanians did, out where it enters Lake Victoria, people following this. Well, this is, of course, all total nonsense. But it was American – or European race theory that was the basis for this artificial division they did in both Rwanda and Burundi.
Can you talk? I'm interested in Hezron. Maybe just talk some more about some of the things that you have been involved in with the Alternatives to Violence program, specifically in Kenya.
My favorite has been working with on interreligious dialogue between Muslims and Christians at the coast. And this is, again, one area that was occupied by the Arabs before the Portuguese came in. And then finally, there was a struggle now between the Arabs and the British colony. And so Mombasa is the coastal town in Kenya, is predominantly a Muslim area. But of course, you know, they have been being an urban center, there have been people moving in because of, you know, job opportunities. And then setting up Christian churches in the region. So lately there have been some kind of tensions between the Muslims and the Christians. And this goes back again to global events like the 1998 bombing of the former US embassy in Nairobi. And of course the bombing that took place here has also affected us. So we've seen tensions building up between Muslims and Christians. So we started working at the coastal town in Mombasa in 2005. And we've seen quite a tremendous change in terms of, you know, people building trust. Initially, just like the case that Cecil talked about, when you bring Muslims and Christians together in a workshop, you see all those tensions. People be seated this side, that side, people treated different sides. Mm-hmm. And that will tell you right away that these people, you know, have all these differences and all these stereotypes about the other. So we start, you know, like all these games that we do in Alternatives to Violence Project, and we'll ask people, can we do this comfortably? Because we always seek, you know, people's consent if they want to play a certain game or not. And so, for example, Muslims will say, no, we can't touch, we can't, you know, mix with the people. We'll say it's fine. We will do with those who feel comfortable to do it. And you find at the beginning they will just stand and watch. But as you go through the program, at the end of the day you'll see people mixing. Then as you go through some of the themes, you know, talking about power, talking about, you know, issues of communication, then you find that a lot of what people have is just stereotypes. But they discover there's a lot to learn when they are ready to listen to the other party. And so at the end of the day, people will say, oh, this is one of the workshops. I mean, I've never been in a workshop that like this one. I've learned a lot just listening to what the other part has shared about themselves. And so it's a point that, you know, enables people to learn more about the other and build more trust. So we've seen people even working more together, forming ABP committees at their cost. And this is helping, you know, to spread the message in their different religions.
Yeah. Let's talk with someone else here. In the time that remains, we have a couple of minutes. This is a caller from Gibson City, line one.
Yes, hello. Mm-hmm. Well, first I want to thank you for what you're doing. And I was able to hear a speaker, a woman speaker, I think a couple years ago, that did come to Quaker meeting. And I just was so grateful to hear her stories. And I guess I just want to encourage everybody that can to go tonight to hear you speak, because to hear each other's stories is where it is. And I think we in America have kind of isolated ourselves to our own situation. And by listening to other people from other countries and their stories and what they've gone through is how we're going to reconcile and have peace and justice and love for each other. And I just want to thank you, and I'll hang up.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Almost nothing need to be said to add to what you said, I guess, other than I will mention again that our guests will be giving a talk tonight at the Friends Meeting House in Urbana, 1904 East Main Street at 7 o'clock, and it's welcome. Anyone's welcome, open to the public if you would like to hear what they have to say. I'm curious about, David, how it is you got involved in doing this work. So you've been traveling to Africa, have had some experience in Africa that go back some years now?
Well, when I was a student in college, they had a program that was taught for teachers for Africa at that time, volunteer teachers for Africa it was called. So I took after my junior year, I took a year off to go to Tanzania to teach Rwandan refugees right on the Rwandan-Burundi border. This was 1994-95. Mm-hmm. So I've been involved in the region ever since. I went back later in the Peace Corps for a couple of years and then stayed some more years in Kenya, starting what they call a Harambe school self-help high school, which happened right after independence. And then I was married to a Kenyan, which is Joy's mother. So I've been involved in the region, you know, for a long, long time. No Swahili. And and I'm moving there on July 11th. My wife's already in Kenya.
Yeah.
So
this was in the late 90s. Was this a second career for you?
Well, I started the African Relations Initiative in 1998. I was the representative of Baltimore Yearly Meeting to the Friends Peace Teams, and that's when I said, "Hey, why aren't we doing something in Africa?"
Yeah.
And since I knew a lot about Africa, they quickly assigned me to that task.
Well, we're at the point here we're going to have to finish up. Again, our guest's David Zaremka. He's coordinator of the African Great Lakes Initiative of the Friends Peace Teams. And if you'd like to find more about that and you have internet access, you can find their website. Just put the African Great Lakes Initiative into your web browser, I think.
Well, the thing is AGLIonline.org.
Okay. And you can find out about that. Cecile Nirmana is a Tutsi survivor of the Rwandan genocide and has been involved in peace and reconciliation work in Rwanda, as she has told the story. Hezron Masitsa is lead facilitator with the Alternatives to Violence program in Nairobi, Kenya. He's also an assistant clerk of the Quaker Peace Network in Africa. And all three of them will be speaking tonight at the Friends Meeting House in Urbana, 1904 East Main, 7 o'clock. Anyone who is interested in attending is welcome. Well, thank you all very much for being here.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you.